Yes, we are in studio and things are getting a little spooky. We're talking about a new book by George Norrie and Rosemary Allen Guiley called Talking to the Dead. And in the last segment, I played a couple EVP clips, electric voice phenomenon. And right after I played the first one, I was handed a note from Gina, my producer who's doing this screening of the calls, that right after we played the first one, the phones froze up, and it's never happened before. Now, Gina, what happened in there?
Well, it's exactly like that, Rob. That as soon as the EVP played, I went to answer a phone line and the phones completely froze and I could see the lines blinking and ringing, but I wasn't able to pick them up and we lost connection to the server.
Now, that's pretty extreme. Now, how often has that happened?
Well, I've been with Coast now more than 5 years and I think it's happened maybe one other time a few years ago. So it was definitely strange with all the talk tonight about, electronics.
Right.
Radio waves
Yeah.
completely froze. So luckily we were able to fix it during the break and Rosemary's back with us. But
Yeah.
yeah, very strange.
Strange timing.
Very
You
strange.
never know what kind of unseen or maybe even unwelcomed energy these clips bring with them.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you managed to get Rosemary back on the line.
Luckily.
Okay, and what did she say it was?
Well, she said it could be the
That's
gin.
exactly what sounds like she would say, yeah.
Yeah, that's what she said. So I hope it's not the gin. I hope that we can remain friendly with them tonight and the
Right.
phones can stay pretty stable.
Yeah, very rare occurrence.
Very rare.
Yeah. All
Very
right. Well,
rare.
thanks for jumping off with
Thank
me.
you. Thank you.
Now, again, this is something that has happened for years and years and years, decades, centuries, that we get these connections coming through, working their way into the cracks of our 3D experience. And the book, Talking to the Dead, available now on Amazon, explores this intersection, explores the cutting edge technology, and I think some of the greatest anecdotes of paranormal researchers and what they've been able to come up with. Fascinating read. We're talking more with Rosemary Ellen Guiley right after the break. And we're back on Coast to Coast. Rosemary, you're still with us.
I am, Rob, and just to add to what Gina was saying recently about the phone lines crashing,
Yeah.
that clip, Lucy, She Can Go, comes from one of my cases involving the djinn. And it seems that they like to mess around with radio more than anything else and
Okay.
telephone lines.
That's why you said that. Of course, the djinn refers to the supernatural components and beings that are referred to in the Quran.
They are written about in the Quran, but they existed before Islam, and the jinn are really everywhere. They're entities who can shape-shift, and I think that they account for a lot of our haunting phenomena. And some of my long-term investigations involve cases that have jinn presences, and they do mess around with the equipment. So I just thought it was interesting that if the phone lines there are going to crash, it has to be on the clip that comes from one of my jinn cases.
Interesting. Yeah, very rare appearance. Well, hopefully we can carry on without any other supernatural interference because that just lets me know that we're headed in the right direction when we start to get this kind of activity going on. But well, getting back to all this, because I know there's so much in the book that really appeals to me, both from someone who believes in the possibility and open to this type of communication, but I've also loved the technical side of it. You've got a lot of cases here that sometimes don't necessarily have to do with trying to talk with the dead directly. Sometimes it's about the dead communicating with the dead. Tell me about that.
There was one interesting case cited by Ron Ricketts, who invented the mini box, developed the mini box. And he was in a session one night where it seemed like the conversation was going on the other side and not with us. And a voice came on and identified itself as somebody named George, and another voice came on, and George says, "Frank, is that you?" And Frank says, "George, is that you?" And they go back and forth like this, like they've just discovered each other. And then George says, "I thought you were dead." And the other voice says, "I am." And the people who were listening to this became the audience to this conversation.
Sounds like an
And
Abbott and Costello routine.
again, there's this kind of bizarre aspect to a lot of these communications. I've often wondered whether or not we're talking to people who are in parallel dimensions, not necessarily the dead, but versions of ourselves, perhaps clustered around the same kinds of equipment or similar equipment, who are also attempting to break through the barrier, and they're looking to us for information. And in fact, I had one communication that was along those lines, where I asked the question, do you have a message? And a voice came back and said, Rosemary, do you have a message for me?
That's pretty sort of startling, isn't it?
Well, it got me to the bone, really, because here again, we're looking to try and break through this barrier so that we get information and help. And versions of ourselves or other beings similar to us are probably doing the same thing. And we could be, the roles could be interchangeable.
Well, I wonder in your research and in the book, does it ever come across a case where you think that the communication is not with someone who lived and died, but in the broader interpretation of an extra-dimensional intelligence?
Yes, and we do have quite a bit of evidence for that. In the 1970s, when a lot of people were being inspired to do EVP research, and with a variety of devices, a whole new field kind of came out of that called instrumental transcommunication, which is the use of high tech. It's computers, faxes, televisions, computers, telephones, recording devices, as a means to get messages, photographic and voice. And much to the surprise of some of the investigators who were at the forefront of this, not all of the communicators said they were human. Some said that they were beings who lived in other realms, and their job was to facilitate the building of this interdimensional bridge. A whole group of entities called the Ethereals, and some of them called themselves the Rainbow People. They said they were a very high vibration. They'd never had any sort of physical form. And we might liken them to angels in consciousness and elevation, but they said they were not angels. And they were very interested in helping human beings bridge these interdimensional gaps, and they were making themselves available with input from their side and also advice and guidance for the equipment that could be more reliable and more effective. One of the primary communicators for a group in Europe called himself Technician, and he said that wasn't really his name. In fact, they were like a group or a collective that really had no individual identities, but that was his function, and that the other researchers on our side could refer to him that way, Technician.
Hmm. Well, this reminds me of a very old coast-to-coast show, and I think it was with Art Bell a long time ago, where the guest was talking about a way in which to communicate with the dead using a shortwave radio. And what he said was, if I remember, it was important to keep it in one place so it didn't move, so that the architects and the collective could actually work on it on their dimension without it moving around. And he kept it on one frequency. Any recollections about some kind of device that works via shortwave on a singular frequency?
Well, people have experimented with shortwave, and there's no universal frequency that seems to work for everyone. And in fact, the groups that have had the most success, yes, they do find that a certain frequency or a range of frequencies delivers the results for them, but that doesn't seem to apply to everyone. And this is one of the problematic things in the field, is that the results tend to be very uneven. They're not replicable like science would like. If this thing is going to be proven scientifically, results can be all over the map. Someone can take the same device and run it at the same frequencies that group A has gotten great results with, and they get no results at all, or results that are not as good or not the same. So it seems to be a mix of circumstances, including a lot of unknown wild cards that go into the success the individual success of these attempts to bridge the gap.
Now, you mentioned just a minute ago about angels and these extra-dimensional beings. Do you think it's possible to actually, in the future, refine the technology so that you're not talking to people who have lived and died, but communicating on a different level of intelligences and creating a dialogue or at least some sort of communications with what some people might call angels or heavenly creatures or maybe the an intermediary level of a spiritual hierarchy?
I think we're doing that already, and you could call them angels or ethereals or ultra-terrestrials, unknown entities in other dimensions. And, of course, human beings have been in communication with those kinds of beings through human mediumship since ancient times. And now we're using technology to do that. In fact, all of the leading researchers, and many of them actually started out as skeptics, to prove that there was nothing to this. And they wound up being not only converts, but some of the international leaders in this field. Most of them have said that not all of their communications come from individuals who identify themselves as the human dead. Sarah Estep, for example, who founded the American Association for Electronic Voice Phenomena, which is now known as the Association for Transcommunication, said that of the 20 or so thousand recordings that she collected over the course of her career, several thousand of them came from entities who said they were from other places, other planets. And she believed that she was getting communications from extraterrestrials. So this sort of factor has always been present in the mix. And again, here we have to go back to Marconi and Tesla, that the signals that they were getting, the mystery signals, they didn't think were coming from Earth, or at least this dimension.
Well, this leads me to ponder a larger question. Anyone who's seen the movie The Raiders of the Lost Ark will remember a scene where he's talking to the French archaeologist and he describes the Ark of the Covenant as a transmitter, the telephone to talk to God. I wonder if the evolution of this technology that that you talk about in the book, Talking to the Dead, is perhaps a precursor to what ultimately could be a way in which to talk to heaven and maybe even what we might consider a deity.
All of these devices are interfaces. They are tools that set up an interface between our dimension and another reality. And there are lots of different realities to connect to.
Now, if that's the case, then you'd also have to imagine that God would not allow this, that the hubris of mankind would need to be punished, just like he did before with the Tower of Babel. And maybe the reason why we get these angry spirits and maybe why our phone just crashed is because maybe there are forces that wouldn't want us to develop this technology.
There is a negative factor. There's a shadow side to this that exists throughout the paranormal and in spirit communications as well. And this is documented in the literature of the pioneers in the field, that not all the communicators seem to be the good guys. And George and I have a chapter in the book called No Love, No Light from the Dark Side, where those experiences are recounted. These would be entities that would try and disrupt communications, psychologically unbalance the researchers. These entities were blamed for interruptions in transmissions, even collapses of the equipment, problems, personal problems people had, health problems, psychological upsets, relationship problems. In other words, getting deep into this work had a lot of potential downside to it for some individuals. Now, some of the skeptics, there are opponents to this kind of research, and some of them are come from the conservative religious factions, and that's their argument. They say that if God wanted us to do this, God would have said so from the beginning. We'd be putting everything in our hands. This is not right, and we should leave it alone.
Well, what about the idea of communicating with non-humans, say animals?
We have documentation for that as well, and some of it gets very strange. Now, people often wonder if their pets go to heaven too, and I think they do. I think there is an afterlife for animals. They have souls as well. People have had dream visitations from their pets. They've had phantom experiences where they still they have visitations, you know, ghostly visitations. And we have had communication with animals. Some of it has come in the form of animal sounds, where people say they recognize the sounds of their pets. We've also had some even stranger communications where the animals communicate in human language. And actually, that's not really so far-fetched when you consider the work that certain mediums do. You know, they're called the whisperers, the dog whisperer, the horse whisperer, the animal communicator, who act as the interface themselves and translate for human beings what an animal wishes to communicate. Well, what if that communication is a little more direct from the other side? There's a bizarre sense that that actually makes.
Right. If you can crawl inside that logic, it seems to support itself. And of course, there's no limits here. We're really in a field of new science. And this is something that you have to create a construct sort of as you go. Is that right?
What, absolutely. And one of the unfortunate things is that research into the afterlife, to proving the afterlife or communicating with the people in the afterlife, often is a career killer for people in the sciences. And that's really a shame, because science should be free to devote its resources to all kinds of inquiries to push the boundaries out. That's what science should be about, exploring the frontiers. And we instead have science shunning this this area because the results cannot be controlled in laboratory settings. We don't really have any reliable equipment that can give us those controlled circumstances for evidence that science would even begin to consider as hard proof. What we have are decades and decades, over a century, in fact, of piles of evidence in support of something. It can't be explained naturally. It can't be explained away. It's unexplained, and it seems to support the existence of the afterlife and our ability to communicate with people who have passed on.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it's one of the most fundamental questions of our existence is what happened to us after we die. And the pursuit of discovering secrets and information from the other side may very well help us in ways in which we can't even imagine. It could heal us in ways. It could liberate us. Who knows what kind of information is waiting for us? That's why we're just scratching the surface. There's a lot more to get to. The book is called Talking to the Dead. It's available on visionaryliving.com. And, of course, that is hooked up through coasttocoastam.com. And how long did it take you and George to write this book?
Well, actually, the genesis of this started years ago in conversations. And, you know, I've been on the show many times with George talking about things like spirit communication. I've played some of my EVP clips before. I took the equipment out to L.A. and demonstrated it for George. And so this has been an area of interest that we've had for a long time, and the book actually coalesced not quite 2 years ago when we started mapping out the outline, and then, of course, it took a while to do the research and writing and go through the whole publishing editorial process. So it has been a long time in the works.
Yeah, this is absolutely epic. And I know there's a lot of people that want to talk, so we might take the phone calls early starting the next half hour. And of course, the hour after that will be all phone calls. We're setting up a dedicated experiencer line so that if you have a remarkable experience that happened to you, you can share that. And of course, we have a lot of opportunity for you, for folks out there, to ask questions to Rosemary about the scope of this book, Talking to the Dead, because I think it's a very important addition to the field. And anyone who has an interest in this, this is the thing that is going to get you the answers that you're looking for. It's clear, it's concise, and it's organized in a way in which it's very understandable, a great read. And as I say, we're coming with phone calls maybe a little bit early because the phones, even though they crashed unexplainably after we played our first EVP, are back They're up and running. We'll use the international line for the experiencers line, and we'll be taking all of your questions and more with Rosemary after the break. My name is Rob Simone. This is Coast to Coast AM. We are back exploring once again some of the big picture concepts. What if there was a device that allowed you to access knowledge from any time, anywhere in our past? What if you could communicate with the dead, not through a medium, but through an actual scientific process that was repeatable? What would you ask? Where would your imagination take you? If we were unbound and unlimited by the restraints of time, by the physical contents of a library, what if we were able to navigate through all the collective knowledge of every human being that has ever lived? I dare say it would be a turning point in human evolution, and perhaps that's exactly where we're headed. This is all chronicled in the new book that we're discussing with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, written by her and George Norrie, called Talking to the Dead. More right after the break. We're back on Coast to Coast AM. And Rosemary, I wanted to ask you, what kind of response have you been getting? I mean, everyone's saying this is really a landmark piece of work. What has been coming in your direction as far as some of the people, that their reactions and their thoughts?
Even people who are in the paranormal investigation field and have been using techniques like radio sweep and EVP have told me they're astonished at the depth of the research and the history of it. People really have no idea how much really has been going on literally behind the scenes since the late 1800s.
Yeah, and it's tied into some of the great figures of American history as well.
It's a look at the high-tech side of things. You know, the human mediumship will never be replaced by machines. And this is a question that I do get asked. You know, will a telephone to the dead, will some other device replace human mediumship? And I don't think so. There's something that human beings like about that connection of a living person to these other dimensional realities. Rather, I think that these devices will augment human mediumship. And in fact, what we've seen in the research so far is that individuals who are naturally mediumistic get the best results with these devices. Everyone's got a little bit of psychic ability, and people who have perhaps more pronounced psychic ability, they might not even realize it, seem to be able to literally interact with their device in terms of getting more frequent responses, clearer responses, and more targeted responses. Sometimes you can ask for a specific communicator to come through, and there's really no guarantee you're going to get it. You might get someone else instead.
Mm. So the same device in the hands of someone who is more attuned or open or otherwise could yield completely different responses.
That's very true.
Interesting.
In fact, there have been some experiments done to that effect, that someone who has had exceptional results from their particular methodology, those same devices, same procedures, followed by someone else, do not get the same results. And this is, as I mentioned earlier, very problematic for science, and it's very easy then to dismiss some of these results as an aberration, or there have been accusations of fraud and trickery and things like that that have plagued the field as well.
This is really inspiring. You have no idea. I am just so overwhelmed with all these different thoughts. I mean, first of all, if this technology is developed, it could lead to so much a positive effects. I mean, people could go in, contact relatives. It could be a great avenue for healing.
Well, can you imagine what it would be like to have a device and dial up members of your family or friends who passed on to the other side and have a conversation with them? People say they would like that, but I think there's also a lot of fear behind that. We want to know, but we're kind of afraid to know. What if the afterlife isn't what we think it is? What if There are other ramifications for the living. And in fact, you know, George and I speculated at the end of the book, what would happen if we thought we had regular access to the afterlife? Would we invade the afterlife? Would we try and control it? Would we try and manipulate it? There have been many communications about what it's like on the other side that really don't conform to religion. And how would that affect our religious institutions and teachings?
Well, perhaps the only way to find out is to develop this technology. And you know what it seems like to me? It seems like the early days of the internet. And what I'm thinking is a wild idea, but what we need is an internet of the dead. In other words, we should build a technology that lets us surf through all of the information that is stored in the afterlife. We need a search engine.
We need a search engine
for the afterlife.
Akashic records, yes.
Right, but with this technology, it seems like it's at the beginning stages, you know, just the same way the internet was.
I really think this is possible. I think we are capable of inventing these devices, reliable, provable communication. We're capable of it, and I think that someday we will have it.
Amazing. Absolutely extraordinary. Well, the phones are just going crazy. Of course, they crashed mysteriously after we played that EVP in the first hour, a very rare occurrence. We had to reboot the servers. But let's take some phone calls because people are dying to get in and weigh in on this. Let's go with the wild card line. Welcome to Coast AM. Benjamin, how you doing?
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to know two questions. One, is nighttime better to contact than daytime? And the second question is, how about the other senses like smell, taste, and touch? Has anybody in contact with that way?
There have been experiments about time of day and night. And, of course, in paranormal investigation, people are usually out in the evening, and they feel that when things are quieter in the world, they get better results. But people have gotten very interesting results during the daytime, too. And there's another school of thought that says that we should get better results during the day when the Earth's magnetosphere is more active. So I've experimented both during the day and the evening, and I've gotten good results both times.
Hmm. What about the other question of contact coming through the other sense of sound, touch, smell?
Yes, of course, people have contact experiences that way. Visitations from the dead are well documented in the after-death communications literature. People experience someone through their senses. Even if they don't see that person, they might smell their perfume, feel touched, hear a voice either audibly in the environment or in their heads that's recognizable to them. Many kinds of experiences documented like this. With the use of equipment, the focus tends to be on what's coming over the device, and so people are less likely to have sensory experiences. But there have been many cases in my own research where phenomena have manifested in the environment while I am running one of these devices. So we don't really understand how this sort of effort activates the whole set of circumstances. And again, things are not consistent. Sometimes you get more and sometimes you get less.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. That's the fun of it, and that's also the challenge of it, too, I would imagine. Let's go east of the Rockies. Hunter, welcome to Coast AM.
Hey, guys. How are you? Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Welcome.
I'm an experienced. I have a question as well. Can I share my experience with you, or should I just ask my question?
Well, let's start with the question.
Okay. I remember there was a report that the CERN particle accelerator, that I don't know if it was just a passing joke, but one of the scientists said that, you know, a bird had dropped a baguette into the thing and it had disrupted their computer system. Is it possible, and I know radio frequency is the basis of all nature, but is it possible with a nuclear device or some type of fission device that you can open up that veil? What do you think of that?
Theoretically, I think it would be possible, but I have not talked to anyone, of course, who's attempted to do that. So I would just have to say right now it's theoretically possible, but probably one of the least explored areas in this field today.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting idea. You have a quick experience you want to share with us?
Oh, I got, man. I was, you know, I got to actually credit Coast to Coast for saving me through this experience, because I would have lost my mind.
What happened?
No doubt that I would have gone completely crazy. And I just remember that all things are possible. It started out, I had a friend of mine that was dying. And before we knew he was dying, he gave me this hug. And I felt this energy come into me, like this blanket of love that was covering me. And I just blew it off. It was just whatever. It was 6 months later, he gets diagnosed. 6 months after that, he died. And as soon as he died, this was right around the summer solstice this year. I look out my window, and people walk their dogs all the time on my street. There's this guy who's looking up at me, and he's got no eyes, zero, like baseball size. And I didn't just glance at him and back away. I stared at him.
Wait, you're saying he had no eyes or big eyes?
Oh, no. There was nothing there.
Okay.
I mean, like almost softball size. Like no brow, no eyebrow, no like faceplate. And like I really started thinking I was crazy. And then this smell started permeating through my apartment. And it was unlike anything I've ever smelled in my life. It was like this sweet sewer smell. And I'm like, what's going on here? This is really weird. And so all these people start saying, like I would meet people and they would say, oh, I bet you want your blue blanket in the yellow dump truck. There's nobody, no way anyone could have known that. And it's things from my childhood. And I had so many, there's so many things that happen. You can't just narrow it down to just one. But ultimately, I feel like some very, very evil presence was here. There was some type of evil that I can't comprehend. And I spent so much time trying to figure it out. And I honestly tell you, if it wasn't for Coast to Coast and like just learning throughout the years that anything is possible, I really think I would have lost my mind. And I started thinking about, you know, why are at least 95% of the cases of people that are mentally ill have something to do with the spiritual realm? And, you know, we're talking about jinn, and there's this ancient fireless smoke. And, you know, what do you think it's possible for this jinn to be able to either go into people or manipulate? Because right after that, I went to go see a doctor because I thought I was crazy. And guess what the doctor's name is? Dr. Jindal.
Let me ask Rosemary, what do you think about that? Is this sound like a case of jinn or more of sort of a ghost experience?
It's often hard to discern without a lot of additional information. It could be. One of the things about paranormal encounters and experiences is there is considerable overlap. And the paranormal, I'd like to tell people, it's not a pie chart with neat little colored slices in it. Things overlap and kind of blur together. So sometimes you have to examine the whole context of the environment, the individual, the circumstances, and the characteristics of the experience to arrive at an approximation of what has happened. There are lots of entities out there, I think, that like to interact with us. Some of them are shapeshifters. They can take on different forms. And it does seem to be the case that people who have various psychological conditions and mental conditions, they seem to be more permeable to spirit communications. And that's been documented throughout history.
Mm, great call. Thanks, Hunter. First-time caller line. Jim, welcome to Coast AM.
Yeah, great show. This is a fantastic topic, both of you. Thank you. And I wonder, Rosemary, whether you might have read a book that was actually written by a woman an American woman that was in France, and I think back in around 1912 or something like that, called Letters from the Light. And have you heard of that book?
I have not.
it was fascinating. It was brought back. It was out of print, and it was brought back about 20 years ago. But the interesting part of it was she was just started to get this automatic writing. And a couple weeks later, she got a letter from a friend in California where she was from, where a judge had died in Santa Barbara that she knew. And he had died like just 3 days before these automatic writings started, and was clear. She wasn't sure what she was getting before that time. It was pretty clear after that it was from, he was like a reporter from the other side. And she was a reluctant secretary. She just hated the process, and she tried to give it up. And she had one friend that kept encouraging her to, you know, keep writing these down. And it was an incredible report of the people that had passed over, including himself, and how they had passed over with really arriving where they thought they would arrive. So his, you know, it became sort of obvious in this particular reporting that, and what we think is going to be the afterlife is what we get. If we think there could be harps and floating in the clouds, we'll be doing that. Or if we, whatever our thoughts are for the next step, that's where we end up. And his one statement that was so, why I bought, I got about 20 of these books to give to friends that were interested in the subject, because the one statement that just so made me laugh and grabbed me was, said, and by the way, death is absolutely safe, which I really, to this day, I carry that belief myself.
What do you think, Rosemary? Do you think that people end up where they project themselves to end up?
I do believe that that's where we start out, at least in the afterlife, that it reflects our beliefs. And those could be conditioned by personal viewpoints, religious viewpoints, cultural conditioning. And we change as we adapt to the afterlife. The communications that have been delivered over the centuries through human mediumship and other kinds of spirit interfaces, and automatic writing is one of those interface tools, pretty much back that theme up, that the afterlife is not exactly as it's portrayed in religion. It can embody those characteristics, but it depends on a lot on our expectations. And as we adapt to the environment, then we experience new things over there. Key to most communications are that nothing is permanent, that there are places where the bad and wicked experience unpleasantness, even torment perhaps, but it's not a permanent eternal state. There's always the possibility for redemption, and that we keep growing in the afterlife, and consequently we keep moving into different environments. I think that some of those are quite remote to human consciousness. When we have contact with the dead, we are communicating with people who are still close to our level of consciousness, our sphere of reality. And it could be over time that we evolve and literally graduate into other states of consciousness and being. And contact with the earth side of things becomes more difficult, or perhaps even not of great interest anymore.
Do you think that a lot of these communications have to do with the circumstances surrounding the death of these individuals? Or could it be some sort of earth memory that holds on to random souls or people in the afterlife?
There are probably a lot of complex circumstances that contribute to a variety of scenarios. And certainly I think connections to the living have a lot to do with it. Some people say that their dead family members become like their guardian angels. They're present to them quite a bit. And other people long for just one contact, and they strive for years and years to get something that's meaningful to them, and they don't get it. And then they wonder why. Why does it happen to other people and not to them?
Yeah.
Well, the dead have also indicated that this bridge is very difficult. It's difficult to build, and it's difficult to maintain.
Yeah, it's a sort of hold the communication lines open. Well, we're talking to Rosemary Ellen Guiley about her and George Knorr's new book, Talking to the Dead. You can get more information through her website. It's hooked up through coasttocoastam.com. More after the break. My name is Rob Simone. Stay tuned.